Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the Macro Insights podcast where I've got Tony Arterbrum. He is a former U.S. Army paraglider as well as the CEO of a gold company. So he's a hard money guy. We talk all about the current state of where everything's at. Are we in a recession? Are we not? And much, much more. So stay tuned for another action-packed episode. And remember, ladies and gentlemen, that this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast is strictly the opinion of Tony and myself and should not be taken as financial advice. So help your boy out. Hit that subscribe button. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Like this. And follow me on Green Candle IT. Somebody took the Green Candle handle everywhere. But follow me, Green Candle IT, every single place, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. And then you could follow me, the host, Brandon, at BKeys1010 on X and KeysOpen_doors on Instagram. And check out my merch at thehodlshop.com. They've got a section for Green Candle merch there, so go ahead and check that out. Buy yourself a hat, a shirt, something to help support the brand and spread the message. All right. Enough for me. Let's get into Tony. Whoosh. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the Macro Insights podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Tony Arterburn here, who is a former U.S. Army paratrooper and also now the CEO of Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. Excuse me. We'll get into all that. But Tony, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on right now. We've got Jerome Powell hinting at an interest rate cut coming this month here in September. Now, do you think that that will help us, you know, get out of where we're at? Do you think we're in a recession? Like, kind of tell us, what the hell is going on here, Tony? And welcome to the show.
Oh, it's so great to be here. I really appreciate you having me. That's a great question. Will that help us get out of where we are? No, it may feel good temporarily. There'll be a sugar high from releasing a bunch of new currency units into the system out of thin air. No, they're just going to Daddy Jerome Powell and saying, please give us more inflation. We need more inflation into the system because the entire thing is built off of fake fiat currency and the expansion of the money supply, unfortunately. And, you know, I think the markets reflect that. We've really changed the nature of what our economy was set up to be at the founding of the United States, and based on production, based on manufacturing, sound dollar, things like that. And we are way, way further down the road. We are off the map in concern the actual economic output here. I think, you know, you really raised a good question. People are just waiting with bated breath to see what the Fed's going to do. And I'm more concerned with the, like you bring up macro, just the big macro picture, geopolitically, financially, currencies around the world, assets. You know, you really take a snapshot of the total debt in the world, juxtaposed to the supposed assets around the globe, it paints a bleak picture, at least in the short run. I don't know if you know, but it's about $350 trillion debt worldwide. And the estimated assets worldwide, somewhere around $400 trillion, something like that. Most of that is based off like sovereign wealth funds, currency, stock markets, probably way overinflated. So I don't think the macro is looking very strange going into this end of the year and then the election cycle and just worldwide. So I'd love to get into that with you.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I mean, you touched on it, right? I mean, the U.S. debt clock, if you go and look up that website, you're going to get a little motion sickness seeing how quickly it's climbing up. But it's sitting at $35 trillion right now, and it seems like there's basically no way out, right? I mean, we printed so much money during the COVID pandemic, and inflation is still running high. So you're a gold and silver guy, so you get the hard money principles aspect of all of it. But, you know, where do you think, like, we're going to get out of this? Like, do you think that, you know, Powell needs to keep rates higher for longer, as he kind of stated, like maybe even increase it even more, and there just needs to be more pain to kind of flush out the softness of the current macro environment? Because, you know, it's interesting, right? I mean, I talked to a lot of traditional financial people, and because the stock market's ripping and rolling, gold price is doing well, like all these asset prices are doing well, they think the overall economy is doing well. And I think there's like kind of a, you know, a separation right now between Main Street and Wall Street. So, you know, as a guy, you know, a military guy, you know, blue collar, but now into more of the financial world, are you seeing that as well, where you see kind of almost a disconnect between Main Street and Wall Street and, you know, just the way that inflation is affecting the everyday people? You know, the stock market isn't necessarily reflecting all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. The canary in the coal mine, I think there was an article up yesterday on Zero Hedge. Dollar General is really having a problem. I mean, their shares are down like 26%. They have like massive downturn in the their projections. And they looked at what's happening and they said, look, the overall customer, or, you know, the consumer is spending less. And this is Dollar General. Again, that's, you know, people, you know, we used to have five and dimes in this country, but they can't do that anymore because the dime and the nickel aren't worth anything. And so they had to change it to 99 cent stores. And then of course they don't have those much anymore. You got Dollar Generals and things are relatively around $5. So it's really, I think, a reflection of what's happened since 1971, when we went off the gold standard. Richard Nixon removed that on August 15th, 1971. And, you know, you ask where we are right now. Are we in a recession? It's kind of akin to the 1970s. They call stagflation, which you get high unemployment, low economic growth, and inflation all at the same time. I don't know what choices they have. You know, the Fed has to look at its standing in the world as the world's reserve currency. That's what the dollar is. In 1944, it was set up at Bretton Woods to be the world's reserve currency system. That's where the IMF was born and the World Bank. And of course, that was pegged, you know, to gold, $35 an ounce. And it stayed that way until 1971. And when we went off the gold standard, really things have been strange economically. That's when we stopped running trade surpluses in this country. I don't know if you follow the trade deficit charts. Like, we used to run trade surpluses, like we didn't have deficits. Now we have trade deficits going up to close to $1 trillion annually. So that's a huge transfer of wealth away from the United States to places like China. And I think just over time, the disparity between Wall Street and Main Street just growing, I mean, further and further apart every single year. Look who was enriched during the pandemic, during COVID. You see, look at all the companies that were too big to fail, right? Or you know, they were essential and you weren't essential, and the disparity there. And that's still, I mean, reverberating through our economy, the supply chain that was disrupted and the lives that were disrupted. But you're right that 80% of all the dollars ever created were created in the last 48 months. So just think, wrap your head around that, you know. And you mentioned $35 trillion in debt. We go $1 trillion into debt every 90 days now. It took us 200 years to do that the first time. I think what we're all watching, especially those who are interested in markets and protecting our wealth or growing, I think there's good opportunity to grow, to start your own business or to bolster your own business or whatever it is to serve others. I think there's some great investments that could be. I don't give investment advice, but I think there's some great stuff on the horizon. But it'll be different than what we perceive, what we grew up with. And I think that the normalcy bias is what's going to be the most important thing to overcome here throughout this decade. This is going to be a very important decade for those of us who are paying attention to the markets.
Let's dive into that. Why do you think it's going to be an important decade? Is it the macro policy? Is it like we have basically two different directions to go? Like, why do you think that this decade is very important, or maybe more so important than the previous decades?
Way more important.
Yeah.
Well, it has to do with the cyclical part of history, if you buy into that. There was a book written in the 90s by these two historians called Strauss and Howe. It's called The Fourth Turning. And basically, to go back through history, you see the Romans had a word for it as a sacrum. About every 80 to 100 years, once a civilization is synced up, you have a massive change in society, upheaval, and institutions are changed. And you can see that, you know, it's basically 80 years from the American Revolution to the Civil War. in about 80 years to, Depression and World War II. And the end of World War II, like I mentioned earlier, the world's reserve currency set up at Bretton Woods was the dollar. The IMF was born, the World Bank, and that was the new economic world order of the time. Well, all those institutions are waning. There's entropy. The dollar has been severely damaged and debased, not by you or I, but those who control the printing press and the budget itself. When I was a kid, there was a huge movement in the country to balance the budget, and it was fiscal hawks, and we're going to go up there and we're going to stop that debt clock. Nobody talks about that anymore. The wheels are off. It's just who can spend more, who can, get the projects for their district or whatever, or just, you can see with the aid that we give Ukraine and other places, just shoveling out while our own country is, the infrastructure crumbles. It's the signs of an empire in decline, unfortunately, because I love this country. And, we're very disconnected from our rulers I don't even believe they like this country. Those of us who really want to see it prosper, are on the other side of pretty much every issue when it comes to the ruling elite. But I do believe that it's the most important decade that we've faced since the end of World War II, because we are in a fourth turning. And the institutions are coming apart, being redone. People are finding a different foothold. You see, the dollar right now is being supplanted. It's called de-dollarization. You can look at, there's a trend going around the world, and it's happening, at a pretty good clip, but it's not like so massive, like you wake up the next day and you have to have a wheelbarrow full of dollars to buy a loaf of bread, like the Weimar Republic or something in Germany in the 20s. That's not how this is going to go right now. It's just going to be this decline, and you can see it. We lost the petrodollar. Nobody talked about it. 50-year agreement with the Saudis that we put in 1974. This was like what kept our dollar alive. Nobody in our government even put up a fight to keep the agreement. So we're losing everything that kept the dollar alive. The overlords in Washington are just walking away from that. And there's some kind of reason. We have to, that's a thought experiment. Why are they letting it lapse? Why are they not setting up deals? Why are they not making us a more friendly economic zone to do business in? Why would a presidential candidate like Kamala Harris basically take the Communist Manifesto and say, here, we're going to do this, this is my plan. So crazy times. Of course, you go to Davos and the World Economic Forum, and they tell you they're going to have a great reset. You should listen to them. These are the people that control the multinational corporations and the banking consortiums. They want to have a great reset. I don't want one, but that's what they say they're going to do. And you have Agenda 2030 with the United Nations. There's a whole host of these internationalists. They have the same kind of plan. And it's really a different plan than you and I would want. I would assume, free markets, free movement of people, the ability to start a business, the environment to where it's friendly to do that. But the good news is that they've told you what their plans are. And I think what their agenda is. And there's so many new entrepreneurs and people that are awake to this, especially because of the damage done to the dollar from 2020 on. And people, when they started going back to work and they started getting, they're like, wow, why is everything more expensive? What is inflation? And I think a lot of people, and I do this, all day long, because people come into my shop and they're like, well, I'm just doing this. I'm just going to buy some silver. I don't know. I know that just instinctually, I think human beings know that they need to get something of value, like an asset, as opposed to currency. And that education that wasn't there 10 years ago is starting to creep up, and I'm starting to see more and more people. And it really is encouraging, because the average person starts to understand the difference between currency and money, right? They can be the same thing. And I talk about this all the time. Like, currency can be money and money can be currency. But so often in today's world, it's just not, right? Currency is void of value. It has nothing. It's not backed by anything like it used to be. And so they just create more of these currency units. So you really are not in a good position. If you are saving dollars, if you're saving those currency units or making that part of your wealth, you're really on the losing end of something. It's not what the world's richest do. You should look at assets and change that mentality of getting out of those green pieces of paper into something a lot more solid. So I believe that, again, this decade will see a shift like we've never seen before, away from our current financial system into something else. And I don't think it'll be China becomes the world's reserve currency. I think that gold already is. I think that gold is supplanting the dollar. These other countries and central banks are buying gold. Well, except us, we don't buy. The United States does not buy gold, but pretty much everybody else does. And they're going to denominate their currencies, I believe, in some kind of digitized gold system.
Yeah, and I think that that's pretty interesting that you bring that up. Obviously, you're a gold and silver guy. You work with, you're a CEO of a gold and silver exchange. You know, we've seen the ETFs in the past 5 years, the past 3 years, I believe, see a net outflow from the gold ETFs in the United States. GLD, when that was launched, you know, many years ago, it was, you know, the hottest thing on the market shooting up. But it's interesting because we've seen the outflow, but then we've seen the gold price double because, like you highlighted there, the central banks of everybody but the United States has been gold buying up gold. China's been doing it for a long time, right? I mean, yes. It's been kind of under wraps. They've been doing it since, I think, even before 2010. So they've seen the writing on the wall. But, you know, what is it going to take for, I guess, like other countries to kind of get onto that path? Because it seems like we're starting to see the de-dollarization, and it in a sense, it all revolves around energy, right? I mean, like whoever controls that market, whether it's the petrodollar or whatever. So do you think that that's going to be the, I guess, the leading driver here going forward, where, you know, maybe some countries only accepts you know, the exchange for oil, one of the leading producers only accepts exchange for oil in gold or in some other currency outside of the dollar, because the U.S. just keeps essentially inflating it away. Is that going to be the final kick? Or do you think that there's going to be some sort of in between here where, you know, BRICS was for a short period of time kind of tossing around the idea of creating their own cryptocurrency or something like that? Do you think that there's going to be an in-between, or it's just going to be an overhaul just immediately one day, bam, they're cutting the US off, boxing us out? Like, how do you see this playing out?
Well, I think the article I read the other day from the Financial Times, the cross-border payments between China and Russia are up like 57% since the sanctions were put on Russia in 2022. You know, the United States weaponized the dollar. I believe we have 40 different sanctions on 36 different countries. So these other countries are just looking for ways to get away from the dollar. As you mentioned earlier, you talked about the petrodollar. About 80% of all energy transactions around the world are done in dollars, but that is waning. It's on the decline, and especially since the Saudis just walked away from the 50-year agreement of the petrodollar without a fight. You know, we didn't do anything to stop them. So I think what will happen, gold will be the value system or something like that. It might be a basket of commodities, but there will be a digitized system where these countries that are just like, hey, we want to be able to transact in real time. It needs to be backed by something. You know, the United States, they were the reserve currency. Everybody could rely on the dollar, but they debased it. And I mean, people know that we debased it. You can just look at our fiscal. Our fiscal house is not in order. The world notices that we're basically a laughingstock at this point for our ability to even take care of our own country. I mean, we spend money on everything else but what we should spend it on, which is nuts, right? And I think that's kind of what happened in the 60s. The world took notice. Like, they're like, hey, you know, they took the silver out of their coins, you know, starting in 1965. And by 1971, we're off the gold standard. I mean, the people like the president of France, de Gaulle, he sent over his warships in 1967 to pick up his gold. He's like, I'm taking my dollars over and I'm sending the French Navy over to get it. I'm going to pick up the gold and take it back to France. So I think this is what's going to happen. I mean, the dollar was an easy system for a good long while. And, you know, the United States government and the powers that be have ruined that. They weaponized it. They got arrogant. We went around like a hubristic policeman, nightsticking people. This is the policeman of the world. And people said, nope, So I think, you know, it won't be like BRICS will come out. I don't think BRICS will come out with some like competing currency per se, but they'll just learn and have ways that will be able to transact around the dollar system. Most likely some kind of digitized gold, could be a mixture, could be a crypto, could be something like Bitcoin, could be Bitcoin itself, or a mixture of things. That's what I think the order of the day is: decentralization. And those are two competing things. You know, we talk about like, what do the elite want? Well, they want to have one central, one thing, one world government, one banking institution, one deal. That's not where people are going. And certainly countries that are, you know, turning their back on the dollar system that we've had since 1944. So it seems like to me there's two things going on. There's decentralization happening in everywhere, and there's, you know, this push for centralization at the top. My bet is on decentralization. But unfortunately, if you, as a consumer or as a person just grew up in the United States, you got normalcy bias. I've got it. I kind of think like tomorrow will be like yesterday. But that's not really how all this is going to work. And we're just in a period where there's going to be a massive amount of change. And so my wheelhouse is just looking at commodities, looking at gold, looking at silver as a monetary metal, and then looking at things like Bitcoin. How do you protect yourself from inflation and geopolitical turmoil? You got to look outside of the Western dollar system.
Yeah, and I think that that's just a matter of time, right? I mean, every fiat currency historically has failed, so it's just a matter of if and when. But, you know, let's get back to the current macroeconomic state, right? I mean, you talked about how we just printed basically like 60% or plus of the money supply since 2020. Now, when we raise interest rates are at a historic pace, the narrative was we did it too late, did it too quickly, and things would break. We've had a few bank failures, but it seems like there's a lot of cracks underneath the surface currently that haven't surfaced yet. Now, historically, if you look back, when we lower interest rates, that's usually because of a recession and we're doing it too late. You know, we've hinted at it a little bit at the beginning of the show, talking about how Powell has talked about lowering interest rates in September. Now, with all that, do you think essentially like a recession is imminent? And if a recession is imminent, that essentially that they're going to have to print, you know, maybe 60% of the money supply again. And then these events are just going to keep coming closer and closer. And that's essentially what's going to be the end of the dollar as it's run here, where, you know, these big events we had first 2000, 2008, then 2020, and now it'll be 2020, 2024, five, whatever. Like these events are just going to keep kind of happening closer and closer until, you know, we reach almost hyperinflation. Is that where you see this almost going?
I don't know about hyperinflation. I just think that the dollar will just lose its the power that it has as king dollar, the status. There was something in the 1960s called Triffin's Dilemma, the economist Robert Triffin, who testified before Congress. And basically, it's a question of what happens to all those dollars that we created as the world's reserve currency to stock all these central banks with dollars. When they're repatriated, what happens? You know, like, again, especially since it's not backed by anything, those dollars create, you know, it becomes so ubiquitous, it devalues the current system. You know, you're talking about raising interest rates. We raised them faster than any time in history. Jerome Powell did. People don't, you know, look at it that way because you go back to the 70s, you had head of the Federal Reserve was Paul Volcker, and he raised interest rates to the teens. I mean, if you had a mortgage in 1980, it was like 13 or 14%. The reason they did that is because we went off the gold standard and there was this shock of inflation. You know, we just printed a bunch of new dollars, flooded the system with them. We just came out of, we're getting out of Vietnam. And there was the term that Jimmy Carter used for the 70s was malaise. I would think we're already in some type of recession, economic downturn. And like you mentioned earlier in the show, I think it only really affects those at the middle and down. You know, those like upper middle to middle and down is who's really seeing the pain, you know, but those on Wall Street and in the financial set and those types, they're not seeing it as much. They don't quite see, because the shock isn't there. You know, they still got enough income where the inflation, they see it, but they don't, it doesn't, it's not changing their world. But if you're only, you're on a fixed income, or if you're going paycheck to paycheck, you're raising kids and you got bills, you go to the grocery store and what was, you know, used to be $200 is now $500. That hurts. Hurts real bad. And you pull back and you don't spend as much. I really think that, what is the old Reagan's definition of the difference between a recession and a depression is like when you're a recession is when your neighbor loses his job. A depression is when you lose yours. So I think it's like who feels the pain is really the indicator here. But I don't want to be doom and gloom. I do think that just the changes that are on the horizon, they will be unpleasant if you're not prepared, if you're looking at this through the lens of, oh, I got a 401k. Oh, I've got stocks, you know. Be very careful about the companies you're investing in. Be careful about, you know, what's their outlook? Are they into ESG? Or are they into profit? You know, like, are they about being stronger? Or are they about being socially correct? I mean, these are things that didn't exist 20 years ago. These are new questions. This is something that's totally bizarre to me. But not so much if you really read history, it's not that bizarre, but it is, you know, when you grew up with, you know, watching Gordon Gekko on Wall Street, where are those guys? They're definitely not at BlackRock. You know, they're not at Vanguard. What are those guys? What are they even thinking now? You know, you were talking about energy earlier. That's the real commodity, you know, gold, silver, energy, oil, coal, copper. You know, these are things, I follow an account on Twitter, Gold Telegraph. He calls copper the glue of civilization. Absolutely. I mean, there's just so many things going on. And I think, you know, if you look at the charts worldwide of where supposed wealth is, it's actually mind blowing because you realize so much of it's fake. There's supposed to like 400, 500 trillion in assets, whatever the estimated thing is. But if you look in the top left-hand corner, this tiny little thing up, it's like the whole chart's this whole screen. And then you look up in the tiny left-hand corner, like little bitty dot, and it's gold. Right up in the dot, 16 trillion market cap. 16 out of the hundreds, you know? And the same thing with Bitcoin, you know, it's 1.2. Silver's 1.4 trillion. When you're dealing with, I look at what I do for a living, it's like I'm trying to find value. It's like, I don't see there's a whole lot of value in all these other squares, you know, with what I know about markets and what I know about how they're propped up. I don't know what choices they have on raising interest rates or lowering them, but I do think that's probably the wrong question to ask. If we wanted to avoid a recession, or if they wanted to avoid a depression, we really ought to be talking about, instead of the interest rates or anything like that, I ought to be talking about how do we make this a place where people have incentives to start, to invest, to grow, to build, to employ, and we don't do that. I mean, that's not on the agenda pretty much anywhere in this election.
Yeah, I mean, I think at a certain point, it's, I don't know, man, the monetary policy, it's always going to be a reflection of the presidential candidates on who it comes on and whatnot. And I think, you know, you're nailing it there. I don't know if we should necessarily be talking about like the interest rates or anything like that, but I think it all kind of revolves around it, right? I mean, there's a lot of policies, right? I mean, the unrealized tax, the unrealized capital gains has been a huge one that they've been tossing around on the Democratic side of things, which is absolute blasphemy. I don't know how they think that they could just toss these things out and potentially, you know, try to get them passed and how that would not tank the economy. I have no idea. But I mean, it seems like, you know, the root of all of it is just, you know, the inflation that we're causing. So do you ever see a world of maybe the politicians or the Fed or somebody getting their head on right and us getting back to more of a hard money standard? Because I mean, if you go to that great website I like to show to my friends who are not in the financial space, the WTF happened in 1971. Yes. You look at all that, you see everything just has gone to shit since then. So do you think that that's where we're going to get, or do you think we're going to have to suffer some pain first before we get into some sort of, I guess, like hard money standard like that?
It'd be a lot of pain first. just again, it's not taught in schools on purpose, you know, to keep people in the dark. If they knew, you know, Henry Ford said, if people understood the banking system, there'd be a revolution in the morning. They just don't understand it. And it's not that it's complicated and they can't understand it. It's just not taught. You know, you don't hear these kind of conversations because when they went off the gold standard, and by the way, when we talk about hard, I kind of look at the markets. I look at the, you know, I can go to my website. I can go to goldprice.org. I can check the price of gold right now. It's a worldwide set standard. Okay. We don't need a government to make currency. That's not really what they should be in the business of. I mean, there should be currency, there should be money, and we should have the ability for legal tender. I think that should be decentralized, honestly. When the government gets involved, they go to a certain sort of the populace and they promise things and they have to inflate the money supply and, you know, then debase it. It happens, you know, great empires rise on economic nationalism and sound money, and they decline on free trade and fiat currency. That's it. And you look at history, when the Roman Empire was strong, when they're at their apex and they start to decline, they start taking the precious metals out of the coins and increasing the money supply and using that, and it debases things. It just, you have an origin story of fake here in the United States with the Federal Reserve in 1913. And it just permeates every part of our society. It permeates our politics, our media, the business sector, especially. I mean, you and I could probably agree that if we didn't have a fiat currency, a lot of the businesses that claim to be so strong in this country just wouldn't exist. They're not strong enough. They're not healthy enough. They don't provide a great service. If they didn't have connections to unlimited money printing and supply for whatever with the Federal Reserve. So it creates a system of fake where, you know, go back to, you know, there's at least 100 plus companies that they're called zombie corporations from the 2008-2009 debacle, the Great Recession. They're still around. They just use them as like conduits and stuff. Like they still exist, but they don't die because they're propped up. Because if they don't prop them up through, you know, all the intermediaries and all the stuff that they do through the flow through the central bank, that it creates a cascading effect. So we're propping up companies that don't deserve to be propped up. The larger question is like, okay, so if you know this going into this decade, well, how can you benefit? And to me, I think the game is watch what the world's elite, or I don't like that. People keep telling me, Tony, stop calling them elite. They're not better than us. I don't mean it that way. I just mean like Davos. Okay. So they've got their private jets. They're walking between the raindrops. They don't think about stuff like you and I do. But those central banksters, they're buying gold by the ton. Okay. And they're doing that because they see something on the horizon. And I'm guess running the simulations, you mentioned something about the, you know, the 70s and, you know, the raising of interest rates, and there's 52 times more currency on Earth today than there was when I was born. So 52 times more currency on Earth. That's a, wrap your head around that. And what does that mean? Is there 52 times more wealth? You know, like, no, it's just, there's just, in any time a government, especially Western governments, when they've gotten into a problem, instead of solving the problem through fiscal responsibility and cuts and whatever, because nobody in this country is going to run on austerity anymore. Nobody's going to say, when I get into office, we're going to cut benefits by 50%. How, you know, vote for me. Nobody's going to do that. So they inflate their way out. And the average person says, well, this is money. I'm going to save my dollars. I've got money. Well, the problem is that just became less valuable. So that's really the game. Is like, if you understand that, then you can start looking at, oh, okay, well, I need to park, you know, my reflection, the reflection of my work and my savings, it needs to be in something that isn't going to be debased, that isn't unlimited. I need something finite. I need a resource. I need an asset. And more people are starting to look at that. And that's why the price of gold is, you know, over $2,500 an ounce, which is nuts. By the way, that's still cheap, given what I know. But I didn't even see gold at $2,500 an ounce this year. I wouldn't call in that. I wouldn't have called that. Even a year ago, 2 years ago, I wasn't calling that. I was like, well, I think we'd definitely break $2,100 an ounce. I mean, that's possible on a big rally. Now it's the new normal. And there's a reason for that.
Well, then where do you think it's going then? I'm going to put you on the spot, man. Maybe Babe Ruth it. Call your shot here.
Let's just point it right out.
Yeah.
So again, not investment advice. I'm not telling you to go buy gold from me or that it's going to. I think $5,000 gold, $6,000 gold is nothing. I mean, it just in my opinion, based off you kind of, let's go back to 19. I'm a history guy. So I always kind of look at the timeline. If you go back to the end of the 1970s, when I was born the day the Soviets invaded Afghanistan on December 26, 1979. Gold was $800 an ounce. It was $35 an ounce at the beginning of the 70s. So gold didn't go up, by the way. That's not like gold didn't, like people didn't discover gold and say, wow, what a great investment. And you couldn't even legally own gold until 1974. It was Gerald Ford made it legal to actually own gold bullion. Franklin Roosevelt made it illegal because they were going to control the money supply, and they didn't want people hoarding gold, you know, because they were going to back the gold standard. So that's a long story, but basically it was a way to make sure that the average person couldn't keep up. They had to use the currency. Well, what is $800 an ounce in 1980 by you? You see? So the price of gold is relative, but $800 in 1980, which one would you rather have? The purchasing power of $800 in 1980 or $2,500 today? Oh, come on. $800 in 1980 goes a long, long way compared to $2,500 today. So I still think we're way cheap. And I just use those metrics. So we'll look at silver too. Silver was $52.50 an ounce in 1980. Okay. So what does $52.50 get you in 1980? That's like $300 today. Silver is $30 on spot market. That's ridiculous. So given what you know about currency debasement, where we are geopolitically, and again, this is something I watched Michael Saylor talk at the Bitcoin conference in Nashville. I'd never seen anybody put, and I'm still fascinated by it. I want to watch it again. I keep bringing it up. I need to go watch it again. If you put it up on the screen and you look at where wealth is in all the boxes, right? And I talked in way up in the left-hand corner, these little tiny chart is gold and silver and Bitcoin. And all these other things, these giant blocks of so-called wealth, what are they? They're sovereign wealth funds and currency and stocks. Come on. You know, where is real wealth held? And that's an open question. I don't know that we know. I don't know that these numbers are even relative. You know, a lot of Bitcoiners think, you know, and I love Bitcoin. I've been in Bitcoin space since 2016. I own some of the first Bitcoin ATMs. Don't ask me if I kept the Bitcoin. You know, it's a sore subject. I should have kept, but I was new. I was like, well, let's just keep the machine stocked. I took care of my clients, you know, and I should have just been like selling my blood to buy the Bitcoin. It was $400, you know, I could be done by now, with relative to just having enough wealth where I could just do podcasts and write. But you get what I'm saying. There's just changes on the horizon that we can't even foresee. And I think our Buckminster Fuller said it best, that people can't get out of the way of what they don't see coming. You know, he was a futurist. And I think I try to future project, you know, what are the prices going to be. But I think by the end of the decade, I mean, would you agree with me? I mean, if you look at, if gold is $2,500 an ounce, when I got into this business, it was $1,100 an ounce. And I've been buying gold since 2002. You know, I bought gold at $300-$400 an ounce. I didn't have a lot of money, but I did buy gold. I just really look at this now and go, wow, you know, where are we going to be with, you know, we know that the dollar is going to continue to lose purchasing power. We know de-dollarization is happening. What does that mean for the price of gold? That's why I said, I mean, $5,000 gold, double it now. Does that really, would it really be shocking to anyone listening to this if gold was $5,000 an ounce and silver was $150 an ounce? No, not really.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know, man. The price of gold, I think I hear you, man. The purchasing power has just gone down. It's just interesting because we've seen asset prices just go insane, go bonkers. So you know, in your opinion, why do you think, I mean, gold has always been one of the slower moving, you know, prices, right? But we've seen real estate. I mean, I'm in Tampa. We've seen real estate in Tampa double in the past 5 years. Why do you think that gold hasn't, I guess, seen quite the run up that you think it should have? Do you just think it's consumer ignorance, like lack of, you know, buying? Like what do you think is like the reason why it's kind of suppressed here now?
Well, suppressed is a good word. I had a gentleman on, wrote a book called Rigged about the gold market. His name is Stuart Angler. Check that book out if you're listening to the podcast, folks. Go check out Stuart's book. It's interesting. It's not a very long read, but it's just he's been in the business a long, long time. And, you know, we went to with the central bank, the powers that be are at war with gold in the U.S. The dollar's at war with gold. That's why we don't buy gold. If we bought gold, there'd be less supply. The price of gold would go up to... We'd be lending a hand against ourselves when it comes to the dollar. And so that's why they don't buy gold, in my opinion. And I mean, I know they're never come out and say that, but they're not buying. And other banks are. And it's because the dollar is a reflection, you know, like we talk about the strength of the dollars is inverse to what the price of gold is. What you're really watching is not so much that gold is even going up. It's just the dollar's losing purchasing power. It's a different way to look at it. Because if you go back and look at the charts, you can buy the same amount of land, crude oil, food, clothing that you could 100 years ago with an ounce of gold you can today. So it's not so much, again, not so much that the dollar is, or the gold is going up, it's the dollar's losing purchasing power. There's that. There's a suppression of the price. And again, there's, you know, these the contracts, the paper markets, a lot of that is I think suspect to, you know, do you actually hold the gold? Can you, if you go and buy GLD or one of these ETFs, I mean, is that backed by, when you cash it out, do they send you a gold coin or do they send you fiat? You see what I mean? So physical gold in your hand, no counterparty risk, same thing with silver, no counterparty risk. If you hold that, if everybody in the U.S. wanted to buy gold tomorrow, or maybe even half, you couldn't place those orders. There's not enough gold. There's not enough silver. So the entire thing would have to completely be redone. Like if you, because I know there, I've watched the markets really closely. There was a couple of years ago, there was a woman billionaire in Texas, and she called up and she wanted a massive amount of physical silver. And they couldn't fill it. So it's going to take weeks, and we got to go to like 17 different exchanges all over the country. That's just one. So there wasn't enough to fill this lady's order. That should tell you a lot, you know. And this is in the, you know, free market, and this is, you know, United States. We got plenty, right? Well, not so fast. Even me, like I've got two locations that I buy for, and that's mainly to support my membership club. You know, I have a monthly buying membership deal with Precious Metals, and I stock that mostly through, like I walked in today before we do the podcast, and we were buying like 400 or 500 ounces of silver, and the ladies that work for me here were doing inventory, and that's going to go directly into my, well, you know, I don't have an unlimited supply. You know, if I doubled my amount of buyers tomorrow, I'd really have to scramble. It could be done, but you see that again, it's not unlimited. It's not as ubiquitous as you think. And I think the problem with between the paper and the physical price, there's such a disparity. That's another thing that will happen in this decade. The exchanges and the price of commodities will all get reevaluated around the world. We're just not there yet. And we're on the cusp of it, but I can really feel that. They're like, there's going to be, and that's what I think a lot of the BRICS nations, the reason they're buying so much gold and, you know, stocking up is, and stocking up on commodities, and is because there's going to be a revaluation of the commodities markets in general. And we're going to have to be nimble enough to understand that it's not going to be based off what the dollar system is either. It's going to be based off of the commodity system.
Yeah. And it's interesting you say that. So, you know, the way I'll wrap it up here with this one last final question, because I see basically like two paths here, and I want to see if you either resonate with any of those two, or if you think maybe something else is going to happen. Basically, here's my prediction for this next quarter And next year, it's basically dependent a lot on the election, right? Whoever's going to win. Not to get super political, but I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here and see if I can if maybe you resonate with it a little bit. But the way I think it's going to go is that Powell's going to keep interest rates high. Maybe he cuts in September. If not, he's going to wait to cut until Trump is in office. If Trump is looking like he's going to win, so Trump can get quote unquote credit for the interest rate cut. But when that cuts, the opposing party or the powers that be are going to do everything they can to crash the market and make it burn so they can point the fingers at Trump when really it's the underlying issues. Now, if the other party wins, if Kamala wins, maybe they'll cut now or whatever, and they'll show signs of weakness now. And then as soon as Kamala gets into office early next year, they'll just bust out the money printer. And then the next guy or girl, whoever in 4 years is going to have to be dealing with basically the problems that we're dealing with right now. And they're just going to kick the can down the road and they're going to keep doing that. Now, do you see that as the situation is playing out, or do you see it playing out some other way in the next quarter to year timeline here?
Well, I really like your analysis. I think that's some sophisticated thinking because you're looking at the grand chessboard. That's good. I kind of look at it similarly. I think, in my opinion, if you're running the simulations and you're head of the central bank and you know what de-dollarization is doing to your currency, and you know that you're doing $1 trillion in debt every 90-100 days. There's $1 trillion just in debt service every year. You know, why not, see what I think they want to, you're right. I think they will get really close to the election, see who's up, see who's down, see who needs to be bolstered. The opportunity I think would be there for this is how I think, Trump pulls off a victory, then they just dump everything in his lap. Say, well, see, it's America first. It tanked the economy. See, it's economic nationalism. See, it's having border security. You see all this stuff this is what tank does. This is what, and to me, that's where I think it's very advantageous for them to dump it in the lap of nationalism. Whereas it's not advantageous for Kamala Harris if she inherits that, because it's going to be bad. Somebody's going to be a Herbert Hoover here. Even it's funny because Joe Biden was running around talking about Herbert Hoover. Trump's worse than Herbert Hoover. I was thinking, wow, man, you you really are pot calling the kettle black here, because you look at the economic history in the last 3 or 4 years. It's devastating, just devastating. And we just have a lot more systems in place now than they did in the 30s to keep the circus running. Just the wheels are in motion. I think no matter who wins, your audience, my audience, anybody listening, and I learn something new every day. Just dig into the macro. I love that you're covering that, and because that's the big picture, the 30,000 foot view, whatever you want to call it. Look at the big picture. Who's up? Who's down? Who benefits? You mentioned China earlier. There's an open question whether China has more gold than the U.S. I think they do. They have 60,000 gold mines. We haven't even done an audit. We don't know how much we have. We're supposed to have 8,000 tons and some change. I don't know that we do. There's just going to be, because those in power, those who have the most power, at least the printing press and control of multinational corporations, they want a great reset. So just be mindful of that. In the face of the election and everything that's going on in the U.S., protect yourself. There's a term from the military, stay frosty. So stay frosty, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, man, I love it. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap it up. So, Tony, why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you and what else you got going on?
Well, again, thanks for having me on. Fun talk. Anytime you want to have me back, and stuff's going to change. So we'll have more things come out, I'm sure. Even anytime like to talk again. You can find my website is my last name. It's arterburn.news, and we're working on that for some updates and social media links and things like that. I'm in the precious metals business, and one of the ways that we have built something to help normal people. It's like, I learned this lesson earlier. I mentioned I bought gold since I was 22 back in 2002. Well, I didn't know what I was doing. And I called a big company and they didn't care that I had a couple $1,000s. But I care if you do, or $200 or whatever. We don't have minimums, but you can find my website's wolfpack.gold. The name of my company is Wise Wolf, but you can go to wolfpack.gold. And that is a revolutionary membership system that's $50 a month to start, or you can go all the way up to 5,000. And we have almost 1,300 people around the U.S. that that buy from me. So the more people that join, the better prices. But go check that out. If you like what I said and you're interested in precious metals, we have a cool program there. And it's educational as well. Wolfpack.gold. And we have a promo code 1776 for a free constitutional silver.
There we go. And I'll put all that in the show notes. So be sure to check them out. And Tony, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.